Hello, friends of Soul Kitchen. Thank you for listening to my podcast. My name is Jasper Mutsaerts. I'm an entrepreneur, adventurer, coach, and wisdom seeker. With Soul Kitchen, I interview people that inspire me, from TED speakers to social entrepreneurs, from activists to artists, from dreamers to seekers, from business people to spiritual teachers. With Soul Kitchen, I empower people to live their quest. Each episode contains a recipe for life. What is your quest? Hello, friends of Soul Kitchen. Welcome to episode 70. In this season, I have published 3 episodes so far. So the first one is on mental money freedom. How can you reach a state of mental money freedom with Tim van der Tillaert? The second episode was on demystifying psychedelics with Greg Carrett. We talk about the pros and cons of psychedelics. And then the third episode was about dating and attachment styles with world-renowned dating coach Flora Ong. And in this episode, we're talking about my 21 lessons in 10 years of entrepreneurship. Why am I sharing this episode with you? Well, on LinkedIn, my most popular post ever has been my post with 21 lessons of 10 years entrepreneurship. It kind of went viral and it reached 164,000 people. I was actually quite surprised. I didn't know that it would go so viral, but it was kind of a sign for me that people apparently found this post useful. So in this episode, I'm going to share my 21 lessons and sharing a bit my experiences and how I came to these lessons. So in 2013, I started my first business. I think entrepreneurship has always been a dream of mine. When I was quite young, I was already selling some things on the street. And during high school, in the last class of high school, I started organizing high school parties, made my first money. And during my first job at McKinsey, I also realized that, let's say, the concept of having a job is not something that really excites me. For me, it's important to have freedom, to make decisions about my own time, my own geographical location, to work with whomever I want, and also to make impact on the areas that I'm excited about. And since 2013, I have co-founded 6 organizations. So one is called Bohemian Birds. It's a travel company. The other is Kula. It's a social networking company for dreamers and visionaries. Then Skill Hub, which is a co-working space company in the Netherlands. Thank You Caretakers, which was a campaign that I set up after COVID to thank healthcare workers for their hard work. Then Booketu. Booketu is a search engine for train and plane travel. And then Soul Kitchen, which is a retreat and podcast organization. And looking back, all these organizations are kind of united by one single purpose: to empower people to live their quest. Yeah, that's also what this podcast is about. And entrepreneurship, as always, I consider it a hobby. I don't really consider it work. It's really a hobby for mine. And I've had a lot of pleasure setting up these organizations. I always have a strategic role, a vision role, and a marketing role. And I always work with other people that are maybe stronger in areas like operations, finance, legal, and IT. So I always work part-time in these organizations. And often there's also people that are involved full-time. And then next to setting up these 6 organizations, I have worked with startup accelerator programs from Impact Hub and Booking.com and the World Wildlife Fund, and worked with many social entrepreneurs in helping them to define their vision and their strategy. And based on these experiences, I'm sharing my 21 lessons. Lesson 0, I think it's an obvious one. I forgot to mention it in my LinkedIn post. But lesson 0 is, of course, to think about why you want to do certain things. You know, what's the purpose of it all? And why you want to start doing certain things. So for me, as mentioned earlier, my purpose is to empower people to live their quest. I have a core belief that life is short, and I don't think it's a good idea to postpone following your dreams, to postpone following your heart, to postpone stepping into your vision, to postpone embracing your purpose. I don't see any reason for this. And I hope to inspire others to really follow their dreams and to live their quest. So that's my purpose. So that's lesson one. I think if you're doing something that is not in alignment with your purpose and vision, at some point you lose interest. So the first company that I founded was a travel business. In the beginning, it felt aligned with my purpose, but at some point the company took a direction that was not in alignment anymore with my own purpose, because we started organizing trips for companies and then it didn't feel aligned anymore. And at some point I also decided to take another direction, because if it's not in alignment with your vision, it doesn't really work. Then lesson one is about time. Only do what only you can do. I think I learned this from my former business mentor, Otto Verhagen, who used to be a partner at Bain and nowadays is the founder of Test Gorilla. And he says, really focus on your strength and delegate other tasks. So really think about what your strengths are, to focus on your zone of genius. I think it's a pitfall for many entrepreneurs to try to do too many things and then you end up achieving nothing. So for me, my zone of genius is motivating people, recruiting people, marketing, motivating, social media, fundraising, but more administrative tasks or finance or IT is not for me. So it's really important to delegate. So that brings me to the second lesson, which is delegation. So when delegating, focus on the desired output, not the input. I think it's very important that instead of saying, okay, I pay you for a certain amount of hours of work, that you pay someone for the output, for the result. When you start the business, you often don't have a lot of money. So instead of paying someone per hour, you really want to make clear what the people need to achieve. So you could say, for every client that you attract, I pay you, or for every website visitor, or for every phone call that is booked. So really become clear about what the person needs to achieve. And I think with delegation, I mean, there's 8 billion people in this world. So with every task that you have to do, it's such a small chance that you are the best person to do this task. I mean, there's 8 billion people on this planet. So most likely someone else is better than you at this task. So it's also in a way a bit arrogant to think that you will be the best to do that task. So I would always say, find someone that is better than you at this task. And if you delegate to someone, really also understand what motivates this person in life, what drives this person in life. Because if you delegate a task to someone that is not motivated to do this task, then it's probably not going to work. So it's very important to delegate to someone that is motivated. You might wonder, I don't have money to delegate, so I have to do everything myself. I mean, that's understandable, but that's a step-by-step process. And sometimes it takes a little bit of risk-taking or guts to start delegating. So let's say you start to be busy, then you could consider to hire a virtual assistant. Hiring an assistant, I've worked with an assistant now for 7-8 years, has been one of the best decisions that I've made in my business life. Starting to hire a virtual assistant, of course, it's scary to invest some money in this person, but it might pay off because you free up your time for other tasks and that can help you grow your business. So sometimes, you need to let go of these fears, or you can kind of, for instance, try to work with a virtual assistant for a few months and then see how it works, and then do that step by step. The third lesson that has been very important for me is about health. And a lesson is, remove alcohol from your diet. It can drastically improve your life. Obviously, I'm not saying that you need to live alcohol-free. I mean, for everyone, it can be different. But for me, I ask myself the question, what could be an action that can drastically improve my health? And for me, it has been to remove alcohol. So for nearly 2 years, I've been alcohol-free. It has tremendously increased my productivity. In the meantime, I sold my first business. I became a podcast host. I moved from Costa Rica to Portugal. I changed my life from, going to parties to walking in nature. So it has been a tremendous well-being hack, so to say, or productivity hack. It has definitely improved my life. And I think many entrepreneurs, there's always so much to do. Maybe they forget about themselves for a while. So this has been definitely one of my most important lessons. And lesson four is about money. If you want to make money, collaborate with people that focus on making money. It sounds, of course, common sense, but I think some people care more about money than other people, and some people are also better at it, they're better skilled. So in most organizations, unless you're maybe a one-man show, but you need, for instance, a strong salesperson. And the difference between a medium salesperson and a great salesperson is incredible. So for instance, with the co-working company, we found a CEO that really is motivated, you know, to also grow the revenues of the business. With the travel company, I found a CEO that was really motivated to grow the revenues, and I found a salesperson. But it's really these persons that, let's say, care about money that also focus on it. So if you want to make money, and of course you can deny this topic or say, oh, I don't care about it. But at the end of the day, many people also like the idea of making money. When you hire people, ask yourself the question, are these people motivated to make money for the business? So that's a lesson about money. And lesson number five for me is about love. When in doubt, ask yourself the question, what would love do in this situation? I learned this from Max Tossel. He's an American poet that I interviewed for my podcast. He kind of gave this, shared this recipe for life. I think it's an interesting one because sometimes you're in doubt. You have maybe a debate with a business partner or an investor or an employee, and you get triggered or you get emotional. But often, you know, when you zoom out, often the differences in opinion are kind of minor. So instead of trying to win every argument, you can take a step back and ask yourself the question, what would love do in this situation? And I think it's this simple question, but quite profound question that can often lead you to a certain answer. So recently, I had an employee who decided to study in Barcelona. And so she was only available 50% of the time. So it was a bit of a disappointment for me, or a bit of a challenge, because for me, it was better if she was available full time. But I asked myself, what would love do in this situation? She was a young, talented person. So I thought, okay, let's give it a try. She's young. She's going to study in Barcelona. Let's help her a little bit. And then I decided to try it out. So I think it's also important, you know, to include love in your business decisions. Lesson number six is about growth. Dedicate 1/3 of your time to personal growth, 1/3 to your contribution to society, and 1/3 to family, friends, and freedom. Obviously, this is highly debatable. Everyone can decide for themselves how they see growth, what their definition is of growth, and what you want to allocate your time on. For me, I don't have children, for instance. If you have children, of course, it's also different. But for me, I like it to spend more or less 1/3 of my time to personal growth, 1/3 of my time to my contribution to society, and 1/3 of my time to family, friends, and freedom. So let's say a year has 365 days, 5 days of the year. Maybe you're busy with Christmas and New Year's Eve, so you have 360 days left. And those days, I like to spend 120 days on personal growth, 120 days on the projects I'm working on, my contribution to society, and 120 days on family, friends, and freedom. That's kind of a time allocation that works for me. So yeah, question that you might want to ask yourself is, how do I want to allocate my time? Like, you know, 365 days a year, how do I want to allocate my time? And how do I want to grow personally and also in my business or in entrepreneurship or in your career? Lesson number seven is around consciousness. Consciousness is, of course, difficult to explain what it is. I still don't know exactly, but I said in this LinkedIn post, experiment with things like breathwork, meditation, psychedelics, tantra, and vipassana. You will find out why. For me, this is also a little bit connected to point three around health, because at some point I found out that my drive for my entrepreneurial projects was not always in alignment with my health, with my well-being, and with my personal life. So I embarked a little bit on a spiritual quest, but I also experimented with taking breaks from work. For me, breath work really helps me to come to the present moment. Meditation helped me to not think. And also psychedelics helps me to get access to my subconscious. Tantra helps me to be more in tune with my feelings. And Vipassana helps me, you know, to take a bit of a break from life, to zoom out and to get new perspectives. Those things, even though initially they might sound counterproductive because you need to invest time and money in them, they've really helped me to accelerate. And I would never have been at the stage of my life and my career where I am now without those things. For instance, I would never have shared this post probably if I hadn't done those things. By doing those things, I have grown my authenticity level and confidence level to be myself and also to share freely online. And yeah, apparently that's resonating with people. Then lesson 8 is around people. Accept meetings from strangers. Assume that they come to you for a reason. So of course, there are time management theories that you need to be critical about who you spend your time with. But for me, if someone approaches me with the question, would you like to meet? Would you like to have a drink? Would you like to discuss something? I always say yes, because first of all, I appreciate that the person is reaching out. And I always assume that they come to me for a reason. Most often I have a good time. I learn something. I add someone to my network. Sometimes I like to help someone. And sometimes also nothing comes out of it, but that's also okay, right? Not every single action that you undertake needs to lead to a return on investment. And when I was an entrepreneur for 2 years, I received a very cool message from Sabine Beuk. In the past, she was called Sabine de Zeel, but nowadays she's called Sabine Beuk. And she said, I would love to work with you. I want to have an entrepreneurial career. And instead of applying for a big company, I would like to work with you. And I was like stressed out at the time. I had so many things to do. So I was so happy to reach out to her. I didn't have a lot of money, but I said, I can pay you for 3 months for 1500 euro per month. And let's go. So yeah, I really appreciated that. And recently, someone that is specializing in courageous conversations, she heard about my podcast and she reached out. So I'm like, hey, let's meet. So I always accept meetings from strangers. That brings me to the next point, to lesson 9, which is about serendipity. Don't always focus on return on investment. A random thing can lead to another thing later. For me, you know, in business, you never know where opportunities come from. You really never know. So I'm not always so worried about what the return on investment is when I meet a single person. You know, when you meet someone, that person might introduce you to someone else. Maybe 2 years later, that person might come back in your life. So I never kind of assume I don't know, I need to get an immediate return on investment. And for me, this serendipity is really what brings me joy in life, but also what brings me joy in business. For instance, I once went to a conference of a travel conference. I met a seasoned entrepreneur. I think at the time I was still drinking. So I think we were drinking till 3 a.m. in the morning. We were having fun conversations. We connected. And then 1 year later, I was fundraising for the business. So I sent him a message. Hey, man, do you still remember me? We're growing our business. I'm fundraising. Would you like to become an investor? And then we started talking. And he said yes. And he's also the man that I sold my shares to. And it all started by drinking till 3 a.m. in the morning. And when I was drinking with him, I was not worrying, is this going to lead to something? Is this worth my time? I was just having fun. And then, you know, later opportunities come. Lesson 10 is about employees. Let them pick their own job titles. They will appreciate it. I think, you know, when you work for a larger organization, they have formal HR departments, structures, salaries, job titles, and there's formal job titles. But I think when you work for a small organization, the benefit is you can let people pick their own job titles. And I learned this from my former mentor, Kurt Hamming, who is a fanatic chess player and also an entrepreneur. He's quite strategic, and I like his philosophies on business. So quite recently, a talented lady from Hungary, Anita, she joined Soul Kitchen for organizing events and podcasting. And she asked me, can I add the job title to my LinkedIn profile? So I said, of course you can. And I said, what type of job title would you like? Then she said, oh, let me think. Maybe events and podcast manager. So that's apparently the job title that she liked. I said, well, that sounds amazing. Why don't you change manager in director, events and podcast director? And then she was like, oh, wow, that's so cool. That helps me to think big. She was really happy. And now she's going to add it to LinkedIn. So it's these small things, right, that can make people happy, that give people a feeling of control, of independence, of empowerment, of aspiration. Because, you know, a lot of people, they like the idea of being independent, but they don't want to be their own boss or don't take the risk or don't take the risk yet. So when you give them the freedom to pick their own job title, they typically love it. So at Bohemian Birds, we had a CEO, we had two directors, we had like young managers. And when people go to a bar and they talk about their work, you know, maybe they prefer to be a manager or a director than that they have to share that they're an intern. So, yeah. So what I learned from employees, let them pick their own job titles. Then lesson number 11 is around customers. Aim for a 9 out of 10 customer satisfaction, and they will refer you to their friends. So there's a theory, a business theory. It's around the NPS, the Net Promoter Score. And the theory says that when clients give you a 7 or 8 out of 10, it means they had a neutral experience. They will not talk positively about you. They will also not talk negatively about you. When they had a 6 out of 10 or lower customer satisfaction, it means they will proactively talk negatively about you. So when people ask how was this experience, they will say, oh, I recommend you not to go because it's a 6 or lower. And then when it's a 9 out of 10 or a 10 out of 10, people or your clients, they turn into ambassadors and they proactively talk positively about you, your company, and your experiences. I also learned that in my first job at McKinsey, I think at the time I was quite young, and part of me maybe was a bit spoiled. So sometimes I received a project and I was not fully happy with it. I was like, oh, this is not really my thing. Or I was a bit complaining. And I would say my work, I was also a bit frustrated by, you know, sitting behind the computer screen the entire day. So definitely my work was not a 9 out of 10 or a 10 out of 10. And then I also learned when you deliver mediocre work, you also don't arrive in the flow, you know, that you get more exciting projects. So what I learned from that experience when I became an entrepreneur is that with every client, I treated them as my most important client. And I always had the intention to deliver a 9 out of 10 or 10 out of 10 customer experience. And since I learned that lesson, I always kind of delivered at that level. And from then on, I always received referral projects. That has been really an important lesson for me in my career. And I think, you know, when you work for an organization and someone attracts a client for you, you don't realize how precious that is or how much time someone invests in that or the trust that has been built. So since I've been an entrepreneur, I always am very grateful whenever I have a client and I treat them with respect and care. Lesson 12 is about investors. I would say, send them frequent updates. It builds trust. So throughout my entrepreneurial life, I think with the ventures combined, we have raised maybe more or less 1 million in venture funding. I think with Bohemian Birds, we raised more or less half a million. With Skill Hub, we raised more or less half a million. And investors, some of them, of course, want to make a return on investment, but some of them, of course, also find it fun to get involved in ventures. And I always had the intention to send them an update every quarter, sometimes more, when it's going well, but also when there's challenges. And I think some entrepreneurs make the mistake that they only send messages when it's going well, and then they're ashamed when it's not going well, and then they're too late when they're nearly bankrupt. Suddenly they're sending a message, hey, can you give us more investment? But then the investors don't like that. With Bohemian Birds, we had 150 crowdfunding investors. We sent them an update every quarter. We held shareholder meetings every year. And I think they appreciated our transparency and our consistency in the investor updates. So at this moment in my life with Soul Kitchen, I'm not looking for an investment because I'm enjoying also to work on my own and to work independent. So I'm not necessarily saying that you should attract investment. But if you attract investment, I think it's important to send frequent updates. Lesson 13 is about media. Invite journalists for lunch. They are humans too. You know, as an entrepreneur, I think it's important to map your stakeholders from investors to media, to employees, to clients, to suppliers, to assistants, to accountants, to lawyers. So really map your ecosystem and make sure that you're connected in every area of this ecosystem. And the media, maybe when you just starting on your journey, you think that this is kind of a mythical industry that you don't have access to. But like journalists, like any other human, they are humans. They need to write stories. They need to create content. And as an entrepreneur, you can help these journalists to create content by sharing your story with them, by inviting them for lunch, by getting to know them. I got familiar with the media industry when I was, I think, 26 or 27. I had this idea to crowdfund a private island in Sweden, and this idea went viral. And then suddenly I got interviewed by journalists. I got to know journalists at television and newspapers. And since that moment, I realized media is a part of an ecosystem. And as an entrepreneur, it's nice to be connected to them. So yeah, sometimes I invite journalists for lunch, or I get to know them at a personal level. And there's a difference, I think, between being a friend and being a fan. So I think it's good to be a friend of journalists instead of being a fan, because then they might feel that you're spamming them. But when you consider yourself to be a friend or a thought partner, journalists can also reach out to you if they're looking for certain stories or if they're looking for certain information. So you don't treat them only that they are people that need to write about you. You also put yourself in a position that you are a thought partner, a important connection for these people. So that's kind of my lesson about media. I would say media relations is one of my strengths. With every initiative that I've built, we've been able to attract media attention. I'll give you one example. So when COVID came to the Netherlands, I decided to set up a thank you campaign for healthcare workers. We recruited 8 co-founders, and my brother created a website where people could leave thank you messages. And then we connected these messages to digital screens in hospitals, so we could show these messages to hospitals. Then we found an advertising agency to help us. We had billboards. We came in the newspaper. And then quickly, journalists started to show interest. But it's this step-by-step process. And it's also important to invite journalists to write about your projects, to provide them with the opportunity to be the first to write about you. And at the end, we also got awarded for the Gouden Loekie, which is a Dutch advertising award. So I think throughout my career, I've learned about the relevance of media, learned how to work with journalists and really treat them as humans. Then lesson 14 about assistant. Hire an assistant so you can focus on your zone of genius. This is a little bit connected to point 1 and point 2 about time, only do what only you can do, and about delegation. So for me, it also depends on your MBTI type. When I worked at McKinsey, we learned about MBTI types. It's a personality system that has 16 personality types. And I am an ENFP. And ENFP is the campaigner. It's someone that motivates other people to move basically or to get something done. And ENFPs are great campaigners, but we are more focused on the big picture. That's also why I host vision retreats with Soul Kitchen. But ENFPs are not so focused on the little details and the practicalities of life. That's not like our area of strength. So why am I saying this? Yeah, so at some point, actually, my ex-girlfriend, I was super busy. I was like stressed. I had so many small tasks. And then my ex-girlfriend, I'm very grateful what she said at the time. Please hire an assistant as soon as possible. And exactly that day, sometimes women can have, or often women can have a good influence on you, or at least on me, because that was exactly what I needed. So I hired this assistant. I said, please help me. And I hired her for 5 hours per month. But these 5 hours were amazing because a task she can do typically in 5 minutes or 10 minutes. So that means 5 hours is around 30 tasks or even more, let's say 30 to 50 tasks. And imagine that suddenly all these 30 little tasks you can delegate to someone else. She's called Marloes van Bingerden. I've been working with her for a long time. She has been incredible. So if you are like me, if you're an ENFP, or if you are busy, you know, really consider hiring an assistant. It has really saved my life. So lesson 15, accountant. Hire an accountant, pay your taxes on time. Solid finances is a hygiene factor. I think if you're not a designer, don't pretend to be a designer. If you're not a lawyer, don't pretend to be a lawyer. If you're not an accountant, don't pretend to be an accountant. At the beginning of my entrepreneurial journey, I think the first year, I tried to be an accountant. I tried to do my bookkeeping and it became a mess. It literally became a mess because I had many blue envelopes. I kept postponing it and it was really a mess. So after 1 or 2 years, I asked Merel, Merel van Vlaanderen. She is a phenomenal accountant and bookkeeper and a finance manager. She really helped me by opening all these envelopes, paying the taxes, organizing my bookkeeping. And it was such a stress reliever. So I would say that for me, hiring an assistant, hiring an accountant, you know, attracting a business mentor were very important steps for growing more mature in my entrepreneurial journey, for becoming more mature. It's also at the identity level, taking yourself more serious. If you don't have an assistant, if you don't have an accountant, you might think, oh, I don't have the money yet. But then again, it's a bit of a chicken egg situation, because if you hire those people, you also might free up your time and be better able to attract money, right? So those are chicken egg situations. Then 16, one of my favorite things is around networking. Attend epic events, for instance, Burning Man in California or Envision Festival in Costa Rica. Business opportunities come when you have fun. I think that attending epic events or Mindvalley in Estonia, I've attended, they can cost you maybe $2,000 or $3,000. So it's always a bit scary. But these types of connections, they can really be meaningful and powerful. For instance, Mindvalley, I spent like €3,000. I met Tim van de Tillard, the founder and chief executive officer of Bookachu, that you also have met in the podcast earlier. He speaks about dreaming big with Bookachu and mental money freedom. I met him and I think I already made, maybe 15,000 through that partnership. So 5 times back my investment. Then at Burning Man, I met Adriaan Kolff, whom you've seen in the podcast. He talks about personal branding and accountability and goal setting. At Envision Festival, I also met some incredible people that I follow on Instagram and that inspire me. So these types of investments in epic events or retreats or personal growth experiences, they often scary to make, But for me, at least for me, by making them, you also meet people that take themselves serious and you kind of enter a new league. I hope that doesn't come across as arrogant when I say that, but you enter a new league of people and a new league of opportunities. Lesson 17, social. Share your stories and experiences on social media. People enjoy following people, not brands. So one of the things I've learned is that if you want to grow your business, your brand, people like to follow people. They don't like to follow brands. They like to follow the CEO of Patagonia instead of Patagonia. They like to follow you instead of your company. So since I learned that, I've always been focusing on my own personal LinkedIn account and sharing lessons, experiences, journeys. And people that have been following me for the past 10 years, I think they followed a bit my journey and the lessons that I've learned along the way. And I tend to have an informal and an open style. And at some point I met Lisa Janssen. She used to work at LinkedIn. She has also been a journalist and she gave me some advice. She said, I believe you have potential on LinkedIn, but you can share longer posts. You can make them more personal, show people even more about your life and your journey. And for instance, this post that I shared with you that reached 164,000 views, I only have been able to do that by opening up more, by showing more of myself. So Adriaan Kolff also talks about this in the podcast, that if you want to reach people, be authentic, be open, share personal stories instead of, let's say, saying Harvard has said this, Stanford has said this. So then 18 is about mentors. Great mentors and coaches are crucial. Oprah Winfrey has 4 of them, me too. Yeah, so it was really eye-opening to realize that one of the most successful, of course, the definition of successful is debatable, but let's say one of the most successful people in the world, Oprah Winfrey, she has multiple mentors. And I always like to have mentors. So I had a business mentor, Otto Verhagen. I worked 1 year with Ole van der Straten, a former CEO of Unilever in Mexico and Philippines. I have a spiritual teacher. She's called Therese. I have a personal health coach called Tom Tunig. So I always like, to learn from mentors and to have coaches. And these investments, I think, are the best investments that you can make in yourself. So if you're the type of entrepreneur that is not yet investing in yourself, I would seriously question that decision and maybe start investing in coaches and mentors. Then risks, number 19, often things are less risky than people want you to believe so. For instance, starting a business or moving to another country. In reality, it's not so risky because if everything goes wrong, maybe you can still sleep at the house of your parents, at the house of your uncle and aunt, at the house of your friends. And if you lose all your money, maybe you can take a job in a restaurant or you can Uber for a bit. Or maybe people are afraid that they have a gap in their resume. I think this is one of the biggest lies that exists, because let's say you go on a 1 year trip or you learn something or you volunteer for a while, there's always people that appreciate these types of experiences. So in my humble opinion, often things are less risky than people want you to believe so. Then 20, heart, follow your heart. Life is too short not to do it. I mean, this might sound like a cliche, but I truly believe this. Life, I mean, it's this, we have this short adventure on this beautiful planet. And let your heart be the guide, let your mind be the organizer, not the other way around. So I don't see any reason why you should not follow your heart, or why you should postpone following your heart. So if there's something that is at your heart right now, why would you postpone that? Then 21 is about recipes. Create your own recipes for life. Take other people's advice with a pinch of salt. So I think the Soul Kitchen podcast is really also about, you know, recipes for life. I ask people, what is your recipe for life? And I think it's very important to really create your own recipes for life, so you can learn from other people, you can learn from teachers, but then at the end of the day, really create your own recipes. I think for me, it has been a journey to let go of OPP, other people's opinions, OPO, other people's opinions, and to step into the boldest and most truest version of yourself. So these were my 21 lessons. I hope you enjoy them. If you have questions about it, if you have any comments, always feel free to reach out. And as I said earlier, I was also kind of surprised that this reached so many people on LinkedIn. But because it did, I decided to share these lessons. So if you're following my podcast, you've noticed that I start doing more solo episodes. In the near future, I will also do an episode on the path of sobriety. Now do an episode on what I found on Antarctica. And I'm also, I also will be interviewing many, many exciting guests. So stay tuned. Thank you for listening and keep in touch. Have a wonderful day.